Yeah, buddy. Welcome back into the Jeep Bag Nation. If you're just now getting in your car and you're wondering whose voice you're listening to, Blake Elliott, joined by Brian Broaddus, and of course, Lucius Alexander in the Pimp Cup. Gavin Dawson had to run over to the little urgent care, make sure nothing was going wrong with him. Someone texted in, Blake, don't sit in Gavin's seat. You'll get the MRSA, M-R-S-A. What's that? What is MRSA?
It's the sickness.
Is that what he has?
We think it might be in his back. You might want to change that.
Yeah, you got no sleeves either, brother.
Yeah,
you
know what
I'm saying? It's contagious. Like,
well, we don't know. We don't know what it is.
You might want to go get the chair you were sitting in.
Okay, talk for a second. I'm gonna grab that chair. I don't want MRSA.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we should have said something, shouldn't we, Lucius? I that's a bad teammate on my part.
Yeah, you should have told him, man. He's got his naked arms laying right next to where
Dawson
was.
He jumped right in and started doing Cowboys football like there was no tomorrow. So
yeah, he had a bunk where there's like 3 tablespoons of goo came out of it, bro.
he's
just leaning on next chair.
Yeah, he does. He didn't have his headphones. Lucius just told you what he Dawson had a serious situation happened.
Yeah, he had a mump that had like 3 tablespoons of goo that came out of it.
What?
You got your naked arms laying in the same spot. So I will be careful a little bit. Something rise up.
I saw him tweet about that yesterday that he had a pimple and asked if anyone wanted to see.
Yeah, that's
cool. I read the replies. Nobody said they wanted to see.
Nobody wants to see that.
I'm glad he didn't tweet it out.
That man's a masochist in a sense, you know?
Yeah. Shout out to Gavin Dawson. Y'all send y'all's prayers his way. I'll be filling in for him while he's at urgent care. I got 5 betting hot takes for your Dallas Cowboys.
All right, here we go.
We'll see which ones are the hottest. We'll see which ones you'd be willing to put your hard-earned Tolo money on, your Tolo bucks. Would you be able to do it? Here's the first one for you. Dak Prescott, Brian Broaddus, will win NFL Comeback Player of the Year. Other guys you'd have to beat out just to help you out.
Yeah, help me out.
Aiden Hutchinson is the favorite at +320.
He might lead the league in sacks.
Christian McCaffrey at +370.
He'll be close to the leading rusher.
Trevor Lawrence at +450. And then J.J. McCarthy at +850. Those 4 guys all have better odds than Dakota Rain Prescott.
I'm going to say Aiden Hutchinson would be the one I would bet on there.
So you would not take that bet?
Yeah, I think Aiden Hutchinson might lead the league in sacks. And I think that'll be the comeback player of the year.
I could see
that. And everybody's saying right now you're a Dak hater. I'm just saying that Aiden Hutchinson is that good of a player.
I would not take Aiden Hutchinson just because of the offseason workouts I've seen. That leg does not look great. How much are we going to buy stock in? Maybe. I know it's been said before the Detroit Lions are maybe a victim of their coordinators. Aaron Glenn being gone. Do we think Aiden Hutchinson and Anzalone is going to be enough on that defense? Or is Aiden Hutchinson even going to look the same? I am going to go on the side of he'll still be a very good pass rusher.
Mm-hmm.
Will he be leading the league in sacks? I know, but he was so dominant. Didn't he have? He led the league in sacks like 4 weeks after he was still injured.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing about it. I think that he's one of these guys that kind of figures these things out. And so I'm going to say, I think Dak is going to have a really good year with all the skill players. I just think that Aiden Hutchinson might lead the league in sacks. That's just me.
Where would you situate Dak in those odds? And Christian McCaffrey's
second,
there.
Second.
So you think he'll be better now?
Yeah,
okay.
Second. Yeah.
I can get with that. Yeah. We got one more Dak one. Dak Prescott will lead the NFL in passing yards.
No.
+850 on the prop market on DraftKings.
No, I would not do that one.
I would probably go guys like Joe Burrow ahead of him.
Yeah, somebody. I think this team is going to run the ball a lot more than it. I think if you want to know the recipe for how this is going to work, the recipe would be how the Eagles played last year, where Hurts didn't throw the ball a ton.
Don't make mistakes,
but then you throw the ball, the play action stuff. That's how you operate, but you run the ball well enough. I think this team's going to run the ball, and I think they're going to try and run the ball.
I think
his passing yards are going to be a little bit down from that.
That kind of gets me in another side note about Dak that it's been on my mind for a while, and it's been talked about. Do you think Dak can rewrite his legacy this year? And if so, is it going to be with numbers, you know, MVP type season, or is it strictly based on wins? Like say, he, like you just said, doesn't have the great numbers, but they win 12 games?
It's going to show the recipe for him to have success will be the wins will come by really good play caller and his teammates helping him out. I don't think it's going to be him just having to carry the load. I think it's going to be their offensive line. It's the power gap scheme, these backs, how they use these backs, and then the play action stuff off that. He's going to be, he is going to, it's not a bus driver role, but it's a role where he's probably going to be pretty comfortable. If Dak's one of these 23 for 28 games and everything else comes running the football, I think that's the best recipe the Cowboys can have.
So he does that. He's 23 for 28 for, say, like 178, just below 200 yards a game
on
average.
That's what Hurts does.
So if he does that, they win 11 games and they lose in the second round of the playoffs. Does that rewrite his legacy? Or do you think that keeps him where he's at?
Yeah, you can't be losing the second round of the playoffs. Okay. So that's, I mean, if, you know, if, how about win a first round game too would be probably pretty good. But yeah, they've got to find ways to get past that first. If they get in the playoff, I think it's going to be a difficult year. I think if the Cowboys are like 10-7, 9-8, I know people don't want to hear this. I think it's a good year. I think Schottenheimer, he does not need this team to go like 5-12.
Correct.
He doesn't need that, or 4-13. If he's going to build this team and build credibility with the players, he's got to find a way to have a winning season. It might not be a playoff team, but he needs to have more wins than losses, at least a 9-8 record at worst.
How much of how they start the season is important to you for Schottenheimer's confidence? Obviously, you open the season at Philly. Then you have a home game against the Giants. You go to Chicago, home against the Packers, on the road versus the Jets. So if you are, let's say, a loss of the Eagles, a loss of the Packers, and maybe a loss of the Bears, if you're 2-3 after five games,
that's oof.
Do you think that's a hole that Schottenheimer can climb out of? Or do you think if they have a slow start?
I don't think they can afford a slow start.
Okay.
I don't think they. I think especially offensively, they need to be out of the gate quick. They don't need week five and all of a sudden CeeDee Lamb get mad and go in there and tell them, hey, we're doing it the wrong way. I think right off the jump, they need to have some offensive success.
Let's say they lose to the Eagles. I don't think that's a hot take. I mean, even if they look good, you got Giants, Bears, Packers, Jets. They need to go 3-1 in that stint for your estimation to have any chance.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. The next Cowboys hot take that we have right here is that the Cowboys will finish second in the NFC East. That is at plus 300 right now.
I kind of feel people feel like that the Eagles that maybe things with the Eagles might, you know, that maybe they might, you have a Super Bowl run.
They may regress.
I don't know if they regress that much. I think Dallas will be battling for the second spot, though. I think it's either going to be the Commanders or the Eagles in the one spot. And then, I honestly, the Christmas Day game, Dallas versus the Commanders in Washington, that could be for a playoff spot. That's how much I think that game's going to have riding on it.
You got the Chargers the 4 days before.
Yeah.
At home. And then you travel to, this is in Washington, yeah?
It's in Washington, yeah.
In Washington 4 days later. You think the Cowboys are up for that? Play the Chargers and then travel 4 days later on Christmas in Washington.
Jim Harbaugh team, that's going to be a physical damn game. That's going to be a tough game right there. I kind of feel like Dallas is going to, that game is going to come down. When I looked at the schedule, I looked at it in a way of saying this game, this late in the year, divisional game could come down to, if Philly's winning the division, this might be coming, it might come down to like the winner of this game is in, the loser's out. That's how I think this game is going to be. And it's played, like I say, 4 days after games already being played.
Well, we're talking about who's winning the division. Fox put out the fun graphic of the last 10 NFC East champs. It's always a fun one to follow. So for you guys at home listening, 2015 was the Commanders, 2016 the Cowboys, 2017 the Eagles, 2018 the Cowboys, 2019 the Eagles. So that trend goes Washington, Dallas, Philly, Dallas, Philly.
Yeah.
2020's the exact same trend. 2020, Washington. 21, Dallas. 22, Eagles. 23, Dallas. 24, Eagles. So the trend, if the trend were to continue, the Washington Commanders will win the division this year. How much stock do you put in the Commanders regressing or them being a top dog pushing the Eagles?
Wolchuk was on the Commanders early last year. I think that quarterback's incredible. I think this Terry McLaurin stuff is kind of unfortunate right now. But I really, really do like, I think this quarterback with that coordinator, it's a college offense. He's clearly comfortable playing in it. I think they're going to get better. Mm-hmm. I do. I think that, and defensively, we'll see how things shake out. But I think offensively, they might have the best quarterback in the division.
It's actually kind of funny how stacked the NFC East was. We went through that little spell. I want to say it was like, I don't want to put a year on it because I'm going to be wrong, where none of the teams in the division were good.
Yeah.
Now you have it where three teams are legitimate playoff contenders, two being in the NFC championship last year in the Eagles and Commanders. Some of the best, probably three top 10-ish quarterbacks in Hurts, Daniels, and Prescott. Uh-huh. When you look at just the wide receiver trios, it's probably the best division as far as wide receiver rooms.
Yeah.
The worst one is Terry McLaurin and out there in Washington with Debo Samuel, and that's saying something.
Right.
Unless you want to, I don't know who's even a two-way out there in New York with Malik Nabers? Because obviously we all know Malik's running things down there, but who's even his running mate right now?
That's a good question.
Not Wandale Robinson anymore.
No, no, no.
Slayton's
no.
gone.
No, 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 no. Yeah, it's funny you said because I was looking at it's somebody that we know.
Is it?
Yeah.
Obviously not too good.
No, I'm going brain dead on you right now.
I'll look it up for you. When it comes to the different rooms in the NFC,
is it? Oh, geez, I didn't even want to guess.
I don't want to guess either.
Yeah.
Let's look up Giants since depth charts were released today. And a lot of people got...
I mean, I wonder who they got rid of.
It says on here Slayton and Wandale Robinson.
Okay, Slayton. I thought maybe they'd done something with Slayton. But
now,
yeah.
Could that be different? I'm not in the Giants room. They got Jalin Hyatt as well,
yeah.
Still,
yeah.
Who I think is probably the second most talented guy over there. But we'll have to wait and see. The last hot take that they have is Brian Schottenheimer will win NFL Coach of the Year. It's at plus 3,000, Brian.
Yeah.
Would you take that bet? Would you put $100 on that for him to win Coach of the Year?
No, I don't think so. I don't think. I think he's going to have, I want to say he's going to have a good year, but I don't know if he'll be Coach of the Year. I would be surprised if that was the case.
Coach of the Year to me is a little bit of a stretch just because, one, obviously he's coming into his first year. There's a lot of drama going on. Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, all that good stuff. We know all about that. So, I think this team will look better than they did last year, but that does not say they're going to win a playoff game. That does not say that this defense is going to learn how to stop the run. It's not mean that Mozzie Smith is all of a sudden going to get good at football just because Schottenheimer's out there. I think you've got a lot of good vibes, but at the end of the day, all the people listening right now, the things me and you care about is winning football games. You can say all the right things, but if you don't have it when it matters, then it's not going to be able to get it cut. It's not going to cut it down. People are texting in, Slayton, don't sleep on the Giants. The Giants are not going to do anything. How can we watch Cowboys practice today live? There is no way.
There's no way. Now, DallasCowboys.com will have training camp live. I don't know. I need to text Tommy Varish and ask him when they're going to have training camp live. That might be the best look you have. But these guys and gals that cover practice are going to be stationed around the field. The clips are the best way, but Tommy will they'll have training camp live. I'll just have to see when it is.
We're going to be checking the Twitters to see if anything happens with this Cowboys and Rams joint practice that's going to be happening here in just a second. If anything big happens, we'll have you covered here on The Fan. It's always fun doing radio with Mr. Brian Broaddus, but next, Gavin Dawson sent me a phenomenal story right here. Former NFL player arrested for dogfighting in Broken Bow, Arizona. We're going to discuss that as well as some more fun stories and as well keeping you up to date on all things Dallas Cowboys next in the nation. Welcome back, Nation. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first. 214-817-3333. That's 214-817-3333. With Frankel & Frankel, there is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel & Frankel, the go-to car and truck attorneys in Dallas. Welcome back in, Blake Elliott, Brian Broaddus, our boy Lucius in the Pimp Cup with the beautiful sounds as we come back and hang out with you, Tolos. 877-881-1053. The Frankels, hit us up and let us know what you are doing today on this. What day is it? Tuesday?
It is Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
I got my days all mixed up. I'll be at the Rangers game tonight with the bosses as they take on the New York Yankees, looking to get their second one over theirs. We'll do talk to Jared Sandler on the other side. Before we get to that, former NFL player arrested for dogfighting in Broken Bow, Arizona. This is kind of if you need to rack your brain, this is a Michael Vick style, but obviously not as popular of a player. This is LaShawn Johnson.
We drafted him in Green Bay.
Wow. Let's just start there. I said he's played Green Bay, the Cardinals, and the Giants from 1994 to 1999. So before I even get to the story, what do you know about Mr. LaShawn Johnson?
Yeah, we drafted him. He was Northern Illinois is where kind of an interesting running style. He was from Oklahoma, though, he's like really a real cowboy. Like he's a like he is like
cowboy
a
horse, boots,
horse
hat.
Riding, yeah, okay. You know, roper, that kind of stuff. Funny, coming out of Northern Illinois, super bow-legged. He could walk over a fire hydrant and never know it. He's one of that kind of bow-legged guy. But, yeah, he had a really unique running style where he just kind of bounced off people. Really couldn't make anybody completely miss. He was a run into you, bounce off another guy, keep running. He was really a contact collision runner.
Okay.
But, yeah, he was tough. I mean, because he rode horses, rode bulls, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I was not – and let me tell you what, I'm not surprised. Not surprised this happened. So I'm really not.
Story says he was convicted of 6 felony counts of possessing dogs for use in animal fighting ventures.
Yeah.
He was acquitted of 17 other similar counts. He faced up to 5 years in prison. Uh-huh. And a fine of up to 250,000, 250 big ones, of each count when he's formally sentenced at a later date. In quote, the FBI will not stand for those who perpetrate the despicable crime of dogfighting, FBI Director Kash Patel said in a statement. Thanks to the hard work of our law enforcement partners, those who continue to engage in organized animal fighting with cruelty will face justice.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors allege that Johnson operated Mao Kant Kennels in Broken Bow, or in Broken Arrow in Haskell, Oklahoma, and selectively bred, try to guess the dogs.
I'm assuming it's easy to say pit, but there was probably
whatever you think the answer is.
Is it the Mastodon or whatever those things are called, like big time fighting dogs?
Selectively bred pit bull dogs,
okay,
known as champions or grand champions because of their winning dog fights.
Okay.
Early this year, the government seized 190 dogs from Johnson that had been in the custody of the U.S. Marshal Service. So wait, are they saying he had over 190 dogs and they took 190? He still had some left over and said, "Yeah, we're gonna put these in a dog fighting venture." My question to you, Brian, I'll give you the last details about the story in a second. Who's going to these? Who's?
Oh, it's kind of
it's lucrative.
Yeah, that and. Cockfighting, stuff like that, you know? Pause.
As Brian looks in the film, got to some make sure.
Yeah, but, you know, like, yeah, you have these things. Lucius, I mean, Oklahoma, right? Dog fighting, big?
I would never show up to a dog fight, but, yeah, my cousin, he was kind of into it.
That's what I'm saying. They're
people. He would have some. Yeah. He'd be so proud of me, like, yo, come look at my dogs.
Yeah.
And you get out there, they're, like, all manged up and beat up, and they're on chains. You're like, fam. Yeah. You don't see this? Like, you don't see what you're doing? You're looking crazy right now to me.
I feel like there's other things you can do with the dogs other than potentially put them in a fighting situation where you're going to go to jail for 5+ years.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. And you lose a lot of animals, too, man. Like, they always don't win.
Just kind of a way of life, you know?
I would just think there's different ways to go about it.
Dallas used to be a real big dog fighting hub, like, a long time ago, like in the 20s or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When it was, like, thing for money. Like, if you had big money, you go out there to the dog fights, you eat steak, you smoke cigars.
My question is, if you get caught at said dog fight and you're betting, do you get in trouble? Like, say I was to go to this one, I'm like, I'm betting on this dog, do I also get in trouble?
For sure.
What if you go but you don't bet?
You're in trouble. If they catch you there, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. Yeah, it's illegal.
Well, I was going to tell people to text it if they've ever been to one. No. But don't,
I mean, they can
do that.
We're not the law. We just can't, you know, give out their number and say, go get them, Johnny.
Don't text in if you've been to a dog fight. Do text in if you're enjoying
the
show.
And then if
you
get caught in a dog fight, you might have to snitch on the people. That's where you get yourself in trouble. Because now the cops are going to ask you questions. Hey, how'd you find out about this place? Let me get more numbers.
Well, Brian was running it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I was running it.
The story talks about Johnson allegedly bred dogs that had won as many as 5 fights and then sold, in quotes, the stud rights and their offspring to other dogfighters. According to the Justice Department, the trafficking took place across the U.S. and helped to grow the dogfighting industry. Wow. While resulting in Johnson profiting financially, prosecutors alleged that Johnson's attorney, Billy Coyle, said his client was a dog breeder who was never accused of fighting dogs and noted that the jury acquitted Johnson on most of the counts against him. He was simply a breeder of the American Pit Bull Terrier. I love the gaslighting, Coyle said. Or I said, but that was what Coyle said. Obviously, the jury found that some of his dogs bred were probably or were used in dog fighting, and those were difficult charges to fight. Finishes off with this. Coyle said federal agents also use heavily handed tactics with more than 40 officers raiding his home late at night, pointing guns at Johnson and his wife, and seizing his dogs and his property. Johnson previously pled guilty to the state of animal fighting charges in 2004 in Oklahoma. He was given a 5-year deferred sentence, according to court documents. So I say all that to say this. If you're going to be dog fighting, one, don't do it. Two, I don't think it should be some big thing. You shouldn't be having everybody in your circle know about it, because then you're going to have guns at you and your wife's head in the middle of the night, and nobody wants that over a couple hundred dollars. I mean, I don't know. Are people making hundreds, thousands, millions of dollars on dog fighting?
Yeah, you can make a lot of money.
You can make a lot of money.
You can make a lot of money because we're charging per head. It's an event.
Yeah.
I'm charging per dog. We got laying side bets on that.
We don't think there's more events that people could make money off of.
Yeah, there should be, bro.
Speaking of, I'm just reading the text line. I'm very scared, because when you guys started talking about his MRSA or MRSA, everyone said it's a serious staph infection.
Yeah.
It's very contagious. Blake has probably caught it. Blake has a sleeve of sun. He definitely has it. Seriously bad bacteria. So am I going
to
die?
Yeah, man. Welcome to adulthood, bro.
Am I going to die?
I hope not.
Be all right.
Is this going to be my last show?
Trying to help
Gavin Dawson filling in. How will I know if I got the infection? I just get a huge pimple?
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty much it. It doesn't go away. Don't pick at it or anything. Just let it do its thing. If it gets real big, then you know you probably got 3 teaspoons of goo and some penicillin on your way.
Oh, God. Trying to help my teammates, and I come in, and this is what happens to me.
Come win Fan Phenom, where you can fill in for Gavin Dawson.
Speaking of Fan Phenom, it's happening every Thursday of this month. First one's going to be in Sachse at Jake's Burgers. Come hang out with the G-Bag Nation from 2 to 7. After G-Bag Nation concludes at 7 p.m., they will open up the microphone for you guys to be the Fan Phenom and interview and get on the mic in front of the bosses. Let them know what you got. And maybe you can be here with us filling in for Gavin Dawson and his MRSA. If anybody's listening for the first time, and this is the first time you're hearing me, that is where Blake came from. Almost 2 years ago, Fan Phenom, Gavin Dawson called me. Not Gavin Dawson. I'm glad Gavin Dawson didn't call me.
Yeah.
Gavin Spittle called me, and he said, hey, you made it to the top three. I need you to come in, do your thing. It was with Will Chambers and CA, and I did my Saturday with two other guys, did my thing. Radio silence, Brian. You know this. I was in communication. They weren't hitting me up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I didn't get the job. I'm serving at restaurants. I've told this story before, but there's probably plenty of people that haven't heard this, so I'll share it right here. I take off my clothes. I'm getting in the shower. About to go take a shower. Right.
Right.
Ding, ding. Hear my phone ringing, and I go, "Oh my God!" It says Gavin Spittle, boss at Fan. Of course, I answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. How can I help you? First, I mean, not even 5 seconds into the conversation, Gavin goes, Blank, we did pick a phenom. I said, okay. I just want to say I appreciate you guys for the opportunity. Because the way he said it made it sound like it wasn't me.
Yeah.
I was like, I appreciate the opportunity. I was glad I was able to talk to the guys and hang out with them. Hopefully we can stay in touch. He goes, yeah, Blake, you won't have to be doing that because you are the winner. We're going to send over some paperwork. And then next thing you know, I get the paperwork and I'm here. So I say all that to say this.
Yeah.
If you're at home and you think you can be a Fan Phenom, one, go do the Fan Phenom every Thursday, Jake's Burger, Sachse on this Thursday. Next week, I want to say Grand Prairie on the 14th. And then after that, I want to say Fort Worth. And then I always get this one wrong. It's either Plano or Frisco. It's one of the bougie.
I think it's Frisco's.
Frisco. I know it's one of the bougie places. So I say go to all four. I say go to all four. Blake skipped the first one because I didn't know any better. If I were you listening, you go, hey, I can do better radio than Gavin Dawson, Fred Davis, Blake Broadus, Elliott, Broadus, Wolchuk. Yeah. This is your chance.
Yeah.
Put your money where your mouth is. Or if you just want to come hang out with the guys, it is a great experience at Jake's Burgers every Thursday this month. First one is at Sachse. Come hang out and talk to the guys. I think it's a phenomenal time to fellowship and kind of see what it's like to be on the radio. Even if you are young, aspiring, old, whatever, it doesn't matter. We've got a place for you, and we want to hang out and meet you. But I know we got a place for someone else, Jared Sandler, the phenomenon that gives you all the great Ranger stats. So we're going to be talking to him on the other side next in the Nation. Thank you, Lucius, back here in the Nation. Blake Elliott filling in for Gavin Dawson, who is at the urgent care. As soon as I get an urgent response, I'll let you know how he is doing. I'm joined with Brian Broadus, And of course, LA and the Pimp Cup making it sound nice and crispy. But let's go out to the Denham Leasing Hotline to talk to Jared Sandler, sponsored by Blue Nail Roofing, and hear what he has thought about the Texas Rangers, who have been falling apart, but all of a sudden last night, a little bit of life in their game. Jared, how are you doing on this Tuesday evening?
I'm great. I'm great, Blake, and hope you guys are all doing well. Gavin's okay?
Yeah, so Gavin's got some back problem, MRSA. Apparently it's some staph infection. When I got here to fill in, nobody told me that it was a staph infection. I then sat in the same chair he was sitting in. I have a sleeveless shirt on because I came from the gym, and now everyone's telling me that I'm going to be terminally ill. So that's what's going on.
Well, that's unfortunate. But Gavin's okay, though, right? We're more concerned about him.
Yes. From what we know, Gavin is okay. And as soon as he is back in good health, I think he's going to try to catch here to get the last hour or two of the show. How are things over there right now at the ballpark? I'll be seeing you over there tonight as well, buddy.
Awesome. Yeah, things are great. Yankees are here, so always a pretty lively atmosphere. And certainly fun coming to the yard after a win like last night.
Nathan Eovaldi on the bump tonight. He just won AL Player of the Month. What was different from Nasty Nate? We know he had a one or two game stint right before the month of July where he maybe didn't look like himself, and then he gets back to the dominant pitcher that we've been seeing all year. What has been different from Nathan Eovaldi? We know he's been a great pitcher, but it almost feels like he's taking it to another level, especially in the month of July.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, his first start off the IL is just kind of rehabbing on the fly. So he wasn't his sharpest and, you know, probably not really reflective of who he is when he's healthy, but, you know, the Rangers felt like they'd rather have him throw innings at the big league level instead of waste bullets in the minors. But, you know, after that start, I think his next one, he went five scoreless, maybe he allowed one run. And, you know, he's been that guy for this team. I mean, he's, you know, you wonder, well, why do certain guys age better than others? You know, with Adrian Beltre, for instance, the Rangers experienced a guy who was, you know, maybe better in his 30s than he was throughout his 20s. He maybe had a couple better seasons in his 20s, but the way he carried through his 30s, that's what made him a Hall of Famer. You know, a lot of guys become Hall of Famers. You know, they set the foundation to become Hall of Famers in their 20s, and then the 30s just try not to screw it up. With Adrian, it was, well, he was good in his 20s, but he became a Hall of Famer in his 30s. And I'm not saying that's where Nathan Eovaldi is by any means, but similar to Adrian Beltre, they've got just an unyielding work ethic and quest and thirst to just be better. And I think with Nathan Eovaldi, stuff's always been really good. Health is huge, but talk to guys from a preparation standpoint, and then the ability in-game to make adjustments, to read bats, to read hitters, to, you know, not necessarily stick to the scouting report if there's something that the other team's a change needs to be made. You know, all those little things, I think, make a huge difference. Then his best pitch is his splitter. His ability to throw that pitch for a strike is unique. You know, a lot of guys who throw great splitters don't throw it for a strike very often. He's able to, and then obviously when he needs to get swings and misses on that pitch, he can bury it, and, you know, hitters have no chance.
This is just me being uber curious. Guys like Eovaldi and DeGrom and now even Kelly, some older veteran leadership, what is their role in kind of just hanging out and giving mentorship to the young guys like Leiter and Rocker and Lats and some of those guys that are, you know, have had their moments but have also had some down spells? What are their interactions like from what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Merrill Kelly, I probably have to wait and see a little bit longer. You know, but I he was well-regarded in Arizona, so I'm sure that, you know, as he gets to know guys and gets more comfortable, you know, he'll be a valuable resource. I'll tell you that, you know, Jack Leiter follows around DeGrom and Eovaldi like a puppy dog in the best of ways, right? So, you know, both Nathan Eovaldi is a guy that helped shift the culture here. The Rangers obviously don't win a World Series without his production on the mound during the postseason, but I don't know that they win the World Series without his presence in terms of helping to turn an organization that had suffered six straight losing seasons around, and having the understanding of what it takes to prepare and be a winner on a daily basis. And that's rare for a pitcher. You know, it's a lot tougher for pitchers to do that. And I think with Jacob DeGrom, he didn't have the reputation that I wanted in New York. You know, wasn't tough and didn't care about winning. I think that's just the New York media being upset that he didn't love talking to them on a daily basis, because this guy has been nothing but an exemplary leader and model for young pitchers. I mean, I think there's a shot the other day after one of Jack Leiter's starts, not his most recent one, but the one prior to that, he comes out of the game, he goes right next to Jacob DeGrom, and you see Jacob, you know, kind of mimicking some, you know, fundamentals, some mechanics with the motion and delivery and like, you know, he just constantly working with these guys. And obviously they can't, you know, I think Jacob knows, we always hear how it's really tough for the best players to be coaches because they have just this ability to do things that others can't. Jacob knows that what he does is not what other people are going to be able to do. And so I think the resource he's been for these guys has, you know, been incredible. And, you know, I'd even go so far as to say, Blake, that despite the fact Jacob didn't pitch after his start against the Yankees on April 28th in 2023 for the rest of that year, from that point on, he still was a positive contributor to that World Series team, mm-hmm. just with the guidance and the insight he was able to provide and the leadership role he was able to serve.
I think it's funny when you said Jacob DeGrom coming from New York and kind of how the media felt, maybe had an ill will toward him. The first place my mind went, especially just East Coast media, was Kyrie Irving leaving Brooklyn and kind of all the things that were said about him. And obviously there was a little bit more to that situation, but comes to Dallas and is a saint, a leader, kind of changes the culture and kind of the leadership there. So I think us as, I don't want to say the media, but just people listening to these players from the outside have to be cautious and kind of see them in their a different environment before we put a tag on them and say this is just who this player is.
Yeah. I think the only difference is Kyrie opened his mouth and said things that would make you understand why perhaps, you know, there were opinions shared about it. Jacob never did anything to deserve that or warrant that. So I listen, at the end of the day, he's a small town Florida guy. He didn't love being in New York City. New York City is a great city for some people. For others, it's not their cup of tea. I just think the New York media has a way about them where, oh, if you don't like our amazing city, then you must be soft or you must be this or you must be that. When the reality is, Jacob, like a lot of people in this country, not, you know, I don't know the majority or whatever, probably not, because New York City's an awesome city, but there are more than just a handful of people in this country who don't love New York City. And especially when you're an athlete and, you know, the spotlight is on you 24/7, you don't have any privacy or ability to just separate when you're Jacob DeGrom and arguably the best pitcher in the world, you know, that might not be fun. And I think he just much prefers a lower key setting. And, you know, that's what he has here. And that's why I think he feels right at home playing for the Rangers and being in DFW.
Hey, Jared, you know, the fact that they came back a couple of different times last night in that baseball game, it very easily could have just, you know, walked away and said, you know what, it's just not our night and we'll figure out things the next night. But, you know, is that just kind of what this team is now, that they're not going to allow things to distract them and they're going to find ways to come back in these games and fight till the end?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, their offense kind of disappeared for a few innings there.
Yeah.
And I just think, Broadus, you know how this works, right? Like, in football, the Chiefs find ways to win games. You might turn it on in the second quarter. They're down 14-0, and, gosh, they can't even, you know, they're so out of sync. And Mahomes has no time, and, you know, he's running for his life the minute he, you know, gets the snap. Yet, you know, an hour and a half later, they're kicking a field goal to win the game because good teams find ways to win games. And the Rangers were not a team that found ways to win games earlier this year. Their pitching was unbelievable, but they just couldn't come up with that, you know, that back sequence of a hit and a stolen base and a hit, or a double and then, you know, cashing in or whatever, just getting that one run. And now they're in a little bit of a different spot. Now, hey, it's not like they put together this strong rally in the ninth inning. It was one swing, one ball that tied the game, but that counts too, right? And at the end of the day, we've talked about this a lot. The ability to hit the home run ball is the best thing you can do as an offensive player. And the Rangers yesterday were getting some hits off of Max Fried, and they were able to knock him around a little bit. But, you know, what did the Yankees have? They had that big two-run home run from Giancarlo Stanton. The Rangers didn't have that. They weren't hitting the ball over the fence. And, well, when you hit the ball, like, what if Jock Peterson hits a double off the wall?
Yeah.
What if he hits it 109,000 million miles an hour, but it goes off the wall? Well, now the Rangers have to get another hit off of a really good pitcher in Devin Williams, who I know is struggling, but is a really good pitcher. Well, you don't have to worry about that when you hit the ball over the fence. So, you know, the ability to hit for power is so huge and has been a saving grace, frankly, for the Yankees, despite some of their struggles and their ineptitudes. And that's something that we're starting to see more and more from this Rangers team. And then also on top of that, yes, I just think that they're a team that is doing a better job of finding ways to win games. Obviously, this most recent road trip notwithstanding.
Last one for me here, Jock Peterson and Josh Young, two guys have had an underwhelming season. Obviously, they had the big hits last night to propel the Rangers into beating the Yankees in extras. How much of a game like last night helps the mentality of these guys moving forward? Or do you think it's still going to be kind of a work in progress with these guys and fans should temper expectations?
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, you can have a big game in basketball and you go to sleep, you're fully confident, and you, in some ways, have the ability to dictate your performance that next game. Now, maybe a team really, like, puts the focus on, you know, clamping down your production, but for the most part, you've got the ability to dictate things. It's a little bit different as a baseball player because there's going to be a different guy on the mound who's got, you know, good stuff and is going to be dictating things. But I think the hope is that, you know, a night like last night can take a little bit of a weight and pressure off of Jock Peterson. And maybe the floodgates do open. He's always been a streaky hitter, so maybe he's about to go on a hot streak. He's in the lineup tonight against Will Warren. He won't be in the starting lineup tomorrow against Carlos Rodon. So tonight's a good opportunity for him to, you know, hopefully show some more progress and take some more steps forward because, you know, a lot of people have asked, well, why the heck is this guy still in the lineup? And I understand the frustrations. I understand the production hasn't been there. But the reality is the best version of this Rangers team is one in which Jock Peterson is a highly productive hitter against right-handed pitching, and they desperately need Jock Peterson to be that guy, and hopefully last night was the beginning of a nice little run for him.
Well, I am hoping so for sure because you need him because, you know, Berger's down in the minors. We're waiting for him to come back up and some of your – is Cody Freeman ever going to get another shot before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think he's one injury away, like an injury to a big league player away from being back up here. I think he left a good impression, and I think his versatility will give him an opportunity if that situation presents itself.
Always fantastic stuff from Jared Sandler, second sponsored by Blue Nail Roof. And before we get you out of here, Jared, home run pick for tonight. I got Jonah Heim. I got Jonah Heim going yard today. Who do you have, Mr. Jared Sandler?
I'm going to go with Corey Seager, but I'm really hoping that Jock Peterson goes deep and that this really is the beginning of a big stretch for him because they need it, and he does too.
Well, we appreciate you, Jared, for speaking with us and hanging out with us. Enjoy the game, and I will see you hopefully tonight, buddy.
All right, sounds good.
There he goes, Jared Sandler, out there at the Ranger Stadium, letting us know everything that's happening at the Globe. They will be taking on the New York Yankees tonight at 7 o'clock. Make sure you guys stay tuned into the Fan for all that coverage. Well, speaking of coverage, the Dallas Cowboys practice has begun, the joint practice with the Rams. What is happening? What are me and Brian seeing? What are Brian's people texting? And we'll tell you all that in next on The Nation.